Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
When Tyler Goodrich's husband, Marshall Vogel, asked him what his perfect night would be, Tyler said, a movie night with our kids and pizza and just hanging out. So that's how they decided to spend the evening of November 3rd, 2023. Tyler picked up a pizza from Costco on his way home from work around 5:30 and settled in for a movie with Marshall and their youngest son. But just 2 hours later, Tyler and Marshall got into an argument and Tyler left the house. He hasn't been seen since. Tyler has now been missing for over a year and not one scrap of physical evidence has been found. How did a strong, healthy 35-year-old man with a huge network of friends and family who loved him simply vanish without a trace? Did he decide to disappear, or did something much worse happen to Tyler Goodrich? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Tyler Goodrich. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. I'm Kona.
And I'm Ethan.
And we're the husband and wife team behind this podcast. Each week, I tell you the story of an unsolved missing persons case. Ethan doesn't know anything about the case going into the episode, and he's here to provide his reactions and questions in real time, hopefully asking some of the same ones you have at home. So I was looking for a case for this week, and I went back through some of our listener suggestions and found this one. It was actually sent to us quite a while back, and I didn't do it at that time because it was such a new case. And we've said before that, like, most missing persons cases are solved fairly quickly. So I kind of just put it on the back burner. And when I was going back through our emails, I saw this one again and saw that, unfortunately, it still hasn't been solved, and it's been over a year. So I didn't really know much about this story, but we've done enough of these that when you hear that someone goes missing after a fight with their spouse, your mind goes to one place.
The spouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the timeline in this case has enough other factors that what happened that night certainly doesn't appear to be cut and dry.
Well, didn't you say they were also hanging out with their kids?
Yeah, one of their kids, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how old their kid is, obviously.
I mean, not little, like old, like a teenager, I think.
Right, that kid could provide an alibi.
Right.
So it kind of rules out the spouse.
Well, all right, I mean, let's start the episode. But yeah, it's definitely, like I said, not cut and dry. And even the private investigator who's working on this case, you know, I saw a clip of him on the news, and he was talking about how most cases he works on, it's like, you kind of know what happened. You just have to, like, find the evidence of who did it. Mm-hmm. But this is not that. But let's talk about it. His family and friends very much seemingly want to get his story out there. So hopefully this will help. Before we get started, though, we've had a new member join us over on Patreon. So we want to give a shout out to Andrew G. Thank you so much for your support, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
And remember, if you join us there on any level, starting at just $2 a month, you can get these episodes early and ad-free, and also get a free copy of the ebook that I wrote. But with that out of the way, let's get into the story of Tyler Goodrich. Tyler Goodrich was born on April 2nd, 1988 in Nebraska. He's one of five children and has three sisters and a younger brother. Tyler's parents have been divorced for quite some time, from what it seems, and it looks like he mainly grew up with his father, Lonnie Goodrich, who is now married to Pam Goodrich, Tyler's stepmom. The family moved to Bennett, Nebraska, about 20 minutes outside of Lincoln when Tyler was about two, and Lonnie was a teacher in the school system there. Tyler's the type of guy who still has friends from kindergarten, and in fact, one of them, Rachel Barth, has been one of the leaders in the search for Tyler. He was a driven and empathetic child. His father, Lonnie, told NBC that when his son was in elementary school, he asked if they could bake cookies for the cafeteria workers since they cooked for the kids every day.
Wow.
I know.
That's cute.
Yeah. He was also never a guy who just wanted to sit around indoors. As a kid, he was constantly outside, and that's something that continued well into adulthood, as did his love of athleticism. He was on the golf team in middle school, and in high school, he played basketball and ran cross country. He continued to run and has competed in several marathons. One thing that seems clear about Tyler is that he's memorable. As a kid, he had bright red hair, which certainly helped him stand out in a crowd. But he was also an extrovert. He wanted to talk to everyone and make sure everyone was having a good time in any given situation. He's the type of guy who is well-liked, even in situations where a lot of people wouldn't be. Tyler joined the National Guard and served for 8 years before becoming a corrections officer working for the Nebraska Department of Correctional Services. Another one of Tyler's friends from elementary school, Amanda Meyer, told the Lincoln Journal Star that they used to go to bars and run into ex-inmates.
Yikes, that's terrifying.
Right, but not for Tyler, because she said that none of them ever had any issue with him, and like half of them would just come over and chat.
I mean, my brother is a corrections officer, as you know,
yeah.
And I don't think that he would have that same experience.
I don't think he would either. But this tracks with what Lonnie told the paper, that, you know, after all this happened, he met one of Tyler's coworkers, and they said that Tyler treated every inmate with respect and dignity. He even, Tyler, apparently wanted to become warden one day.
Oh, lofty goal.
Yeah. But Tyler always exuded confidence, even when he was a chubby redhead with freckles. Even after he grew into a handsome 6'1" man, he was hiding a secret beneath his charming, extroverted exterior. He was gay. Despite the fact that he had a loving, supportive family, Tyler didn't come out to them until he was in his 20s. His father, Lonnie, told Dateline's Missing in America that he had actually suspected his son was gay all the way back in the sixth grade, but didn't talk to him about it. And he says that that's one of his biggest regrets. So after Tyler came out, he was able to date more freely and, you know, get into relationships. But those weren't without challenges. In 2014, Tyler was in a relationship that was seemingly volatile. An argument between Tyler and his partner at the time resulted in the police being called and Tyler getting charged with third-degree domestic assault.
That's not good for his career.
Right. And so, but I think this was before he became a CO.
Oh, okay.
I'm not positive. Nobody said that explicitly, but I think it was before. But yeah, I was kind of curious as to what exactly that meant, too, because I mean, I don't know Nebraska laws, so I didn't know what could constitute third-degree domestic assault in Nebraska. So according to the Sapinski Law Office, quote, a person commits third-degree assault in Nebraska if he or she, A, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causes bodily injury to another person, or B, threatens another in a menacing manner, end quote.
I mean, that's...
that's a really, like, wide yeah, range of right. actions, I feel like.
Yeah. Threatening all the way up to causing bodily injury.
Yeah, purposefully.
And purposefully
yeah.
causing bodily injury.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's a big spectrum there. So, and we don't know, you know, what the actual charge was or whatever, but they were ultimately dismissed. But that police run-in very much affected him, as you can imagine. According to his friend Rachel Barth, that incident helped Tyler realize that when he was drinking, he wasn't the best version of himself. About a year or so later, he gave up alcohol for good. It was also around this time that Tyler met the man who would later become his husband, Marshall Vogel. Marshall told Dateline that when the pair saw each other in a gay bar in Lincoln, it was almost love at first sight. Quote, We met at a bar here in Lincoln, a gay bar, and I remember walking by him and he was just standing there. We made eye contact. That was it for us. End quote. 2 years after they met, they got married. Both Tyler and Marshall had always wanted kids, so they made the decision to adopt via fostering. They weren't even fully licensed yet when the agency called them with an emergency placement, a 14-year-old boy. The couple took him in, and he instantly became part of the family. They started the adoption process, and in the middle of it, they received another call. The boy's younger half-brother also needed a home. Tyler and Marshall ended up adopting both of them and completed their family.
That's a lot to take in.
It is. I think that's a lot in a short period of time,
yeah,
too, you know? While the family was happy, Marshall and Tyler's differences, which kind of began as an opposites attract situation, soon began to cause tension within their marriage. Marshall, and everyone else, describes Tyler as very driven. Once he puts his mind to something, he's going to do it. While Marshall, on the other hand, says he's more of a free-spirited, go-with-the-flow type of person. This caused communication issues between the couple. Marshall says that they also disagreed on how to parent their children. By 2023, these issues were not only causing arguments, but were causing Marshall to want out of the marriage altogether. Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right, it's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey everyone, it's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep, can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The True Age test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, truediagnostic.com. Just use the code ATTWG to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. By the time November 3rd, 2023 rolled around, Marshall and Tyler had been talking about divorce. From what it sounds like, Marshall was really the one who was driving these talks. Nevertheless, that day, he asked Tyler what a perfect night would be, and Tyler said pizza and a movie night with their kids. Their eldest son was working, so it was just the two of them and their younger son. Surveillance video confirms that Tyler stopped at Costco around 5:30 to pick up a pizza. But what's not clear from the timeline is if they even made it through the movie before their perfect night turned into yet another argument. According to Marshall, they began talking about their relationship again. Marshall told Dateline, quote, "Things were tough. We both knew that we loved each other very much. It was just maybe our marriage wasn't supposed to be forever," end quote. Divorce was brought up again, and it was Marshall who won it out. When asked how Tyler reacted, he said, quote, "I think he kind of thought that we would fix it or I would back down. And I just knew at that point that I couldn't back down," end quote. The conversation was certainly heated, obviously. I mean,
yeah.
very few divorce conversations are like pleasant, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But it was not like a screaming match or anything like that. And we know that for sure because Marshall recorded it.
Interesting.
The police have that recording. They have not released it publicly, but some family members apparently have been able to listen to it. And both police and family members say that it was definitely disagreement, but like there weren't raised voices or anything like that.
Do we know why he was recording it?
Well, so he told Dateline that basically when they would get into arguments that Tyler would come back and say like, oh, I never said that, or you never did that, or, you know, whatever. And so he said that he was recording things basically for his own sanity so that he could go back and be like, wait, no, you did say that, or I did do that, or whatever.
Okay. Slightly odd, though, I think.
Well, you know, I'm kind of thinking of a lot of this, especially what's about to happen next, as Marshall apparently had also already contacted a divorce attorney and was really moving the process along. And in my mind, what I'm hearing about all of this, what I was thinking was he's gathering ammunition for the divorce.
Yeah.
You know, they had a house together, a really nice, like a big house with like big property. And yeah, I mean, I think he was protecting himself and like I said, gathering ammunition. Now, even though this fight, quote unquote, like, again, wasn't yelling, wasn't raised voices, you know, even the detective classified it as more of a conversation. According to Marshall, it did get violent. Marshall said that Tyler pushed him in the face and the chest. And he said that it didn't hurt and he wasn't like injured or anything, but it did happen. And so he made the decision to call 911. 911 has never been called to the house before. There had never been any previous domestic incidents at the house whatsoever. The only thing that had ever happened, you know, that we know of was that one domestic incident in 2014 before Marshall and Tyler got together. So Marshall in an interview said that he made the call at 7:40, but the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office said that the call came in at 7:47. And I've read other things from the police that said that it was like 7:40, 7:45. So it's, you know, it's kind of hard to say exactly, but it's right around that area. Now, Marshall says that while he was on the phone with dispatch, Tyler left the house out of the garage. Basically, like he was on 911. Tyler, I think, went upstairs and then like went out. And according to Marshall, you know, Tyler was like telling him to hang up. Then Tyler just left. And Marshall heard the garage door. So because he had heard the garage door open, Marshall assumed that Tyler had driven off.
Mm-hmm.
But then after he got off the phone, you know, he went and checked and the car was still there. So Tyler had apparently left on foot. And deputies arrived quickly within about 10 minutes and found that Tyler was indeed gone. They spoke with Marshall, looked around the house and property for Tyler, you know, just to see what was going on, see if they could find him and talk to him, but they didn't see him anywhere. So after about a half an hour, they determined that no crime had taken place and they left. Marshall thought that Tyler had taken off to avoid the cops and, you know, maybe to cool off a little bit and assumed that he'd be back later that night. But he didn't want to be there when Tyler came home. So he took their younger son to his mother's house to spend the night. Now, apparently, Marshall's mother lives pretty close to their house in Lincoln.
Okay.
Marshall says that he returned to the house briefly to grab their older son's laptop. Because remember, their older son was at work this entire time. But he says he didn't see any sign that Tyler had come home.
We don't know when that was.
He says it was around 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And so that was only about a half an hour or so after the police had left. So he said that the police kind of stuck around, the sheriff's deputies, when he was like packing up some stuff and as they left, they all kind of like left together, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marshall says that he came home around 9, which would have been about a half an hour later to grab their older son's laptop.
Okay.
And he said he was only there for about 10 minutes. Now, the couple lives on a large piece of property and they had animals. So Marshall had to return early the next morning to take care of them. He says that he arrived home around 7 a.m. to feed the horses and the goats, but he still saw no sign of Tyler and no indication that he had come back at all. At that point, he was starting to get concerned, so he reached out to some of their friends to see if Tyler had just decided to crash at one of their houses instead of coming home. After calling around and finding that no one had heard from Tyler, at 9:35, Marshall called 911 again, this time to report his husband missing. Once his family found out that Tyler was missing, they were confused. The idea that Tyler would leave the house to remove himself from an argument did make sense to them, but him staying out of contact definitely didn't. Lonnie says that Tyler was the type of guy who was always on his phone and was always easily reachable. In fact, police believe that Tyler took both his phone and his wallet with him when he left that night. His phone last pinged near his house not long after he left. Friends and family started looking around for Tyler on Saturday when he was reported missing, but on Sunday, when he was a no-show for a marathon he had signed up for, the search began in earnest. Because not only was this a marathon that he had signed up for, he was on a team.
Oh.
And so they're like, he would never let his team down like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that was when people were like, oh, shit.
This
like,
is serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Law enforcement, friends, family, and strangers all searched extensively for Tyler all around Lincoln. They started with the paths near his house where he liked to run. They searched nearby ponds with sonar. They flew drones. They did everything they could think of, but could not find one single trace of Tyler. Now, obviously, police were looking at Marshall right away because you have to look at the spouse first.
Yeah, I mean, especially since the police already know that an argument happened.
Yeah.
There's an allegation of, you know, domestic violence there.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, with Marshall as the victim of it, but still.
Sure.
Like, clearly, it's not, it doesn't look good when you call 911 and then your spouse is missing the next morning.
Yeah, exactly.
So that Monday, November 6th, deputies showed up at their home with a search warrant. They took Marshall's phone and other electronic devices in the house. And Marshall says, he's like, I was fine with that. I let them in. You know, I let them do whatever they want. Like, I wasn't, like, I totally got it.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, obviously, they have to look at me first. They have to search our house. Like, all of this makes sense. But that day, they also asked him to come down to the station for an interview. That was kind of where Marshall drew the line. So at that point, he hired a lawyer.
Oh, my God. Somebody that's actually smart.
I know. Like, I know. Right. Yeah,
like, look, hiring a lawyer does not mean that you're like trying to hide anything.
No, it means you're
just smart.
And you're protecting yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what Marshall says. He's like, look, I need it. He's like, I know they're looking at me as a suspect. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I have to protect myself. I have to protect my kids. Because the other thing he said on Dateline was like he wanted to make sure that, because they obviously wanted to interview the, you know, the kids as well, especially the son who was there that night.
Right.
But he's like, I wanted to make sure that they were interviewed by like a trauma-informed interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like they didn't just want some random cop talking to his kids.
Yeah.
Like they wanted a mental health professional, I guess, to do it the right way.
Also, you want to have that representation there for the underage child as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But of course, him hiring an attorney and not going in right away made everybody suspicious.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the cops. The next day. So like that was Monday. This is Tuesday. The next day, they held a news conference and opened it with, quote, Marshall Vogel and his family are no longer cooperating with the sheriff's office on this investigation on trying to locate Tyler, end quote.
It's not that they weren't cooperating. They just wanted an attorney.
Right. And so I think it's kind of insane because can you imagine being Tyler's family and sitting at home worried out of your skull?
And then you hear that? Yeah.
Like, what are you going to think?
Yeah. You're going to think the worst.
There's no way you would not think the absolute worst at that point.
Yeah.
Again, in this case, Marshall didn't actually stop cooperating. He just wanted to speak with his attorney first. He did so, and a few days later, he did sit down with investigators, and his children were also interviewed at a family crisis center. And this whole thing caused the sheriff's office to do an about-face and say in another press conference that Marshall was cooperating with the investigation and is considered a witness, not a person of interest.
Uh-huh.
So they had to do some real fast backpedaling with that one. That didn't stop the online chatter.
Of course not.
But what I will say is Marshall wasn't really helping himself either, because he didn't assist in any of the searches for his husband. But we've talked about this before, that there are legitimate reasons that sometimes even law enforcement asks immediate family members not to search.
Yeah, because if they find something, God forbid the body,
yeah,
they're not going to be able to stop themselves from contaminating the crime scene.
Yeah.
Like going in, picking him up, hugging him, and that could potentially destroy vital evidence.
Right. And it's incredibly traumatic.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if in this case the, you know, police asked him not to, but Marshall has said, he's like, look, you know, my focus at that time was I wanted to support the searches, but like, I just wanted to be there for my kids.
Yeah. And exactly. And that's it. That's the other aspect to this is they have kids. This is obviously traumatic for them. We don't know what the circumstances of what these kids' lives were like before they got adopted.
Right.
Probably not great. Since they had to...
They ended up in the foster care system.
They ended up in an emergency foster care situation. Yeah. Tyler and Marshall have probably had to deal with a lot of that stuff before this and are aware of what potentially could be triggering to these kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't see that as being... Like, I don't see anything wrong with that, you know?
Right, right.
And not participating in the searches, focusing on the kids, because they're obviously going to be... having some issues come up.
That's what he was doing. But a lot of people, of course, did find it very suspicious. And, you know, they also found it suspicious that Marshall wasn't speaking to reporters in the early weeks of the investigation when the rest of Tyler's friends and family were trying to do everything they could to get more publicity to get Tyler's name out there.
Yeah, but we've seen that in cases before, too. And it's like, that's not indicative of anything.
Yeah, and Marshall says that his children actually asked him not to speak to reporters at first. So, you know, that's what he says. Do with it what you will. And of course, you know, a lot of people remain skeptical.
Yeah.
Now, the first piece of evidence, and really the only piece of evidence that the sheriff's office released, was a short clip from Tyler and Marshall's security camera. It was right around 7:45 and shows a man in shorts running away from the home. Marshall says it's Tyler, and law enforcement agrees. I've watched the clip. I probably watched it 100 times while I was writing this. Other than being relatively short, it's a man in shorts. I couldn't tell you anything else about this.
Was he running away from the home?
Yeah, running. He was running. I mean, not like frantically running, but running.
Like going for a jog running?
Maybe.
Athletic shorts or like jean shorts?
I mean, you can't really tell, but it looks like athletic shorts.
Okay. I mean, maybe he was going for a run to clear his head.
Well, exactly. And, you know, this video does match up with the timeline that Marshall gave about the argument and the 911 call. And, you know, I think that we need to also take a minute to acknowledge that, like, the timeline leading up to Marshall leaving the house is pretty irrefutable. This isn't a case like we've seen in so many other stories where the spouse says, oh, yeah, we had an argument, they left. But then it turns out that nobody had seen them in the past, you know, in the previous 3 days or whatever leading up to that.
Right.
Like he's on video at Costco at 5:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Like we know he was fine there. The police said that he seems totally normal on the video. Like nothing seems weird. Right. We know when the 911 call was made. And because Marshall recorded their argument / conversation, whatever you want to call it, on his phone, you have timestamps there as well.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can just backdate the time. I mean, it's all on the cloud. Like, it's very easily to forensically find out, like, when a recording is made on a phone.
Mm-hmm.
Police can see, okay, Costco, argument, 911, blink camera recording. All of these have very clear timestamps.
Mm-hmm.
So we know for a fact that, like, this up to that point is absolutely the timeline. Now, with that said, while Marshall police and even Tyler's friend Amanda also believe that that is Tyler on the tape, Lonnie Goodrich, his dad, doesn't. He says he doesn't think that that's Tyler, but also says that he doesn't really know who it is.
Mm. Why does he not think it's Tyler?
I don't know. I don't know if it's like the way he's running or, you know, or what. But yeah, he said that he just doesn't believe that it's his son and that somebody else was outside of their house that night, but he didn't know who.
Mm.
As November turned into December, any hope that Tyler was simply hiding out and cooling off began to dwindle with each missed day of work, holiday, or event. The fear then turned to Tyler having injured himself either accidentally or intentionally on the night of November 3rd, but that theory was also pushed aside after numerous intense searches found absolutely no trace of him. People were, of course, still suspicious of Marshall. I mean, because there were no other suspects that anybody could think of. What I will say, though, is that Marshall, again, didn't do himself any favors with a Facebook post that he made just a few days before Christmas. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but here are some excerpts. This is how it starts. Quote, Tyler was sometimes physically and emotionally abusive towards me. After years of this, we were discussing divorce. His father, Lonnie Goodrich, was aware of Tyler's abuse toward me. I had retained an attorney and was reviewing the complaint for dissolution. There are recordings that document Tyler was becoming increasingly verbally abusive to me and the boys, and he told me he would, quote, ruin my life. He had removed his wedding ring, end quote. So that's how it starts.
Yeah. I mean, it's not great.
Then the middle part of it is basically just kind of going into his account of what happened that night, which is pretty much what we've already gone over. And he ends it by saying, quote, I believe LSO, friends and family were trying to create an environment where Tyler would return. I didn't make any public statements or correct the misinformation that was being put out. I supported that strategy and kept the actual details of why Tyler ran away from going public. That strategy has not worked. Tyler has not returned. Due to the increasing public comments about my children, I'm no longer willing to stay silent. Neither I or my children had anything to do with Tyler's disappearance. He ran away to avoid the deputies. Although he won't be returning to our marriage, I hope that he's safe and does return to deal with the circumstances he has caused. I appreciate the extraordinary effort the deputies of the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office and the volunteers have put into finding Tyler. Thank you to my family, friends, and colleagues. Your support means everything to me. It's a difficult time for my family, but I hope you have a blessed Christmas. Marshall Vogel, 12/22/23.
So, I don't know. I mean, to me, that doesn't... It's not great, but he's already been cleared as not being a suspect, right?
I wouldn't say he's been cleared. I would just say, I mean, the statement was more like, at this time, he's a witness, yeah, not a person of interest, right?
Okay, but to me, it just sounds, like he's mad.
Yeah, clearly.
You know, because the evidence is not pointing towards Tyler getting into some sort of accident or whatever, so... What he's left with is the thought that, okay, Tyler literally and figuratively ran away from his life and is just out there on his own. And there were already circumstances before that that were not great, you know, leading to a divorce. So he's angry and kind of over it. That's what I'm getting from it.
Yeah, and I see that too, because if he's innocent of doing anything to Tyler, like, I definitely understand how maddening all of the online chatter and accusations must have been.
Right.
But, like, it's a little rough, you know? It's a little intense. Like,
well, he's mad at Tyler.
I guess, but to me, it's a really an aggressive stance to take toward your missing husband and his family 3 days before Christmas when he hasn't been seen for nearly 2 months.
Yeah. I'm not saying it was a good idea. I'm just saying, like, right, I can see where it's coming from.
No, and I get what you're saying, and I agree to an extent, but it's like, I can understand those feelings in the first week, because then you could be like, you know, what the fuck? Like, why did you do this? Why are you, like, putting us all through this and just being mad? But at this point, it's been nearly 2 months. His phone hasn't been turned on. There's been no activity on his credit cards, in his bank, anything. Like, there's no indication that he's out there anywhere. But he's going on Facebook and saying that Tyler just split and is just, like, doing this dickhead thing. I don't know. It just, it strikes me as odd given the timing of it. So also, I know that people have different beliefs. And when it comes to missing people, you often find that some family members will believe that the person is still alive out there somewhere, you know, for years, right?
Yeah.
Where other family members won't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the family members don't believe that they're out alive somewhere, it doesn't mean that, like, they know what happened to them or anything like that. It's just whether it's a feeling they get or they're just looking at, you know, the available evidence or whatever, people just come to different conclusions and they come to those conclusions to help them make it through the day.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that like one group's bad, one group's good or anything like that. But I do find it interesting that it seems as though Marshall is the only one in Tyler's life who has publicly said that he believes that Tyler is still alive and out there somewhere. In January 2024, which again, we're talking 2 months after Tyler's disappearance, like not an extraordinary amount of time by any means, Lonnie said, quote, "I know him too well. Tyler could never do this to us. He could not do it to his friends, to his coworkers, to his family. My son is dead. He is not missing. His body is missing," end quote.
Okay.
He went on to say, quote, "I believe that someone took his life, and I believe they took his life on the 3rd when he didn't come back home. Somebody did it. Somebody knows," end quote.
Okay. That's understandable that he believes that, but there's no evidence of that.
And right. Like, no, you're absolutely right.
And why would be another reason?
Like, I mean, I think the reason is because, what, like you said, that he doesn't think that Tyler would ever do this.
No. What would be the motive behind the murder?
There are a couple different theories, right? So about 3 weeks after his disappearance, a volunteer came out with 2 tracking dogs. They were able to catch Tyler's scent and follow it to the back of his property, which incidentally was the direction in which the person on the video clip was going. So, you know, that kind of lends credence to the fact that that was Tyler.
Same. Right.
So they drew a map basically of like where the dogs kind of tracked, and it was along the perimeter of the property line. So it was like to the back and then, you know, turned, and then they went basically like almost in a square. And so it looked like they were kind of going all around the property and heading back to the house. But then the scent veered off and ended abruptly on a road. Now that indicates that a car could have been involved.
Right.
So either Tyler got into a car, or one of the theories that's going around is that he was hit by a drunk driver or something along those lines, and the driver panicked and took him. The scent trail can also mean nothing because police actually haven't put a lot of stock into it because of the amount of time that had passed between when they went out and when Tyler had last been seen. Like I said, it was like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So police don't really, you know, put a lot of stock into that.
Yeah.
So the drunk driver theory is one that has come up.
I mean, again, there's no evidence of
no, and we've covered several cases in which this theory has come up, and I generally don't buy them. So in this case, Tyler was 6'1" and 185 pounds. Like, that's a lot of dead weight,
right,
for a drunk person to haul into a car.
Yeah.
From what I understand, also, the weather was clear, so any blood or other evidence like would have likely remained on the road when the searches started.
Right.
And even if it wasn't there when people were really searching on Sunday, they weren't in the middle of nowhere. You know, it was a fairly rural area, but if you look at Google Maps, like, there were definitely houses around. You know, if somebody drove by and there was, like, a ton of blood on the road, like, somebody would have noticed, you know?
Yeah. This was also not the middle of the night.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, because, you know,
if there were houses nearby, somebody probably would have heard something.
Yeah. This is like 8 p.m. on a Friday night, between 8 and 9, you know, whatever. But it's, you're right, not the middle of the night. Like, very much a time when people are still awake, out and about, doing things. When private investigator Eric Rezabek was interviewed on News Nation, he brings up the drunk driver theory and says that he believes whatever happened to Tyler happened between about 8:30 p.m. when the police left and about 9:30 p.m. He believes that Tyler was hiding out, you know, waiting for the police to leave, maybe on like the back edge of his property, kind of where there are some trees, but that after they left, he was heading home. But someone got to him first. Marshall does say that when he went home around 9 p.m., he never saw Tyler. He was with his child staying at his mother's house, so it would stand to reason that police have verified that, you know, he actually returned to his mother's house.
Yeah.
And wasn't, say, staying out for several hours or all night or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
To that end, because people still weren't believing him, Marshall took a polygraph test in March of 2024 and passed. As of this recording, it's February 2025, almost a year later, and police have not named any suspects in Tyler's disappearance, nor have they made any arrests. And Marshall did speak to reporters about the polygraph. He's like, you know, I took it because people were saying that I was hiding things, and then I took it and I passed, and then people were saying, well, you can't trust polygraphs, and he was just like, well, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
And, you know, I get it, because I think it is a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
And you can't prove a negative, you know? You can't prove that you didn't kill your husband.
Right.
There's just really, truly nothing else he can do. Again, I'm not saying he's innocent or guilty. I have no idea, because I just truly, there's just no evidence of anything.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at other cases where the police actually went in and searched right away, which doesn't happen in all of our cases for a variety of reasons.
Right.
But if you look at the cases where police do go in and search right away, and something like this did happen, often there is some sort of physical evidence mm-hmm. that's found. But in this case, there wasn't. And they went back to that house several times. That's not to say that he couldn't have done something. But again, there's just no evidence.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's like you said, there's no evidence to show that any foul play happened of any kind, whether that's from Marshall, from some rando on the street. His personality, from what everybody says, is outgoing, positive. I mean, he is a CEO,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, there's also evidence to say that he treated everybody with respect and most of the inmates liked him. But, I mean, again, unless a wild theory would be a pissed off former inmate stalking him, waiting for the right time to pounce.
Right, which seems completely insane.
Yeah, because that, I mean, you'd be stalking him for who knows how long.
Right, and you're just going to magically come upon him when he has a fight with his husband exactly. and, like, leaves the house? Like, exactly. I don't buy that at all, yeah. you know?
But, I mean, other than that, we don't have any, there's no suspect, there's no MO.
Like, yeah.
It's, I don't know.
We definitely know that nothing happened to Tyler before the police were called on November 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, truly, the only way Marshall could have done it would be if, when he did come back to the house, he did see Tyler and something happened then. But that would require multiple family members lying for him, which, again, the Gabby Petito case, it just has a new documentary out on Netflix. So we know that family members definitely will help cover up murders. Sure.
Again, there's also no physical evidence of anything happening at the house either.
Right.
And yeah, okay, people can clean, but I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You also run into the same thing that you mentioned before with the drunk driver. Like, you know, he's 6'1", 180 pounds. That's dead weight now. Let's say you manage to miraculously murder him without somehow causing blood to come out of him, which I don't know how you would do. But
I mean, strangulation.
Okay. I mean, is Marshall bigger than him?
No, that's the other thing. He's smaller. He's like a good 6 inches shorter than Tyler.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
But then how does he get the body out? What does he do with the body?
Right.
Not to get too graphic, but even in strangulation, when a body dies, there's still fluid that leaks out of the body. It doesn't necessarily have to be blood, and that's hard to get rid of.
Right.
So I just don't see.
I mean, unless it happened outside.
But cops still came back relatively quickly, didn't they? When did they execute the search warrant?
It was a couple days later.
I mean, I still feel like there would be evidence of that.
Not if it was just like body fluids, I feel like outside. I think that could have easily been missed. But, or, you know, covered up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it was in the house, then definitely not. The other big theory is that Tyler took off running and, again, I kind of mentioned it in the episode, had an accident just by himself, not like a car, you mm-hmm. know, whatever, or died by suicide somewhere. While the family and private investigators have kind of ruled that out, I just feel like there are enough woods and enough farmland that there is still a potential that even though the area has been thoroughly searched, they have missed him.
I mean, there's always that potential, sure. Yeah.
But so I don't know.
I mean, how likely is it, though? I don't know. And then there's always the Robert Hoagland.
I know, but I'm not buying it all.
I agree.
Because he had a history of that. He had done it before.
Yeah.
Tyler had not done this before.
Right.
It's quite a mystery. It's absolutely not cut and dry. And it's frustrating because there have been so many resources put into this case. You know, this isn't one of the ones that we cover where, like, the police are just like, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, he's an adult. He'll come back.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of resources have been put into this, and not just the police, but the friends, family, volunteers. So many searches have been done, and, you know, like, horses, everything. Mm-hmm. And so for there to be zero clues after over a year is just absolutely infuriating. Tyler's friends and family started the Let's Find Tyler Goodrich Facebook page shortly after his disappearance. They've used it to share news articles, coordinate searches, and just share memories of the man who made such a huge impact in so many people's lives. It's still very active, and his family and friends seem just as dedicated to finding answers as they did on day one. Lonnie grieves every day for the son who he feels in his heart is gone. He also asks for answers every day. Quote, two things need to happen. His body has to be recovered or somebody has to confess. Somebody has to give out the information that they have so we can get closure. And I pray for that. I mean, every day, every night, 100 times a day. End quote. It's a prayer that's shared by the families of every missing person. And let's hope that his is answered. Tyler Goodrich has been missing from Lincoln, Nebraska since November 3rd, 2023. He's a white male with red blonde hair, freckles, and a red beard. At the time of his disappearence, he was approximately 6'1" and 185 pounds. He has tattoos on his right calf and shin and one on the left side of his rib cage. Tyler was 35 when he went missing. He'd be 36 today. If you have any information on Tyler's whereabouts, please contact the Lancaster County Sheriff's Office at 402-441-6500 or Crime Stoppers at 402-475-3600. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by me, Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.